Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is the Soundcheck Podcast.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Tanya Tagaq, the astonishing Inuit singer from northern Canada, blends the traditional throat singing of Inuit women with her own contemporary and often very dark blend of rock and electronic music. Her 2014 album, Animism, won the Polaris Prize, Canada's most important music honor, beating out albums by Drake and Arcade Fire, among others. Her latest release is called Retribution, a musical and political manifesto for women's rights, indigenous rights, and our treatment of the earth. As important as the record is, though, nothing really matches the experience of watching Tanya Tagaq perform live, which is why we're shooting video today. Tagaq's live performances are elemental, ritualistic, and improvised. She's here with electric cellist Jeffrey Ziegler to do just that. Here is Tanya Tagaq, live on Soundcheck.
Thank you. good eye.
Thank you.
Well, that was intense and remarkable. A live improvisation here in the Soundcheck studio from Tanya Tagak, the Inuit singer and composer and activist, with Jeffrey Ziegler playing the cello sent through a rack of effects here in the studio. Tanya, it's great to have you here. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
I'm trying to figure out how to ask this question without it coming out sounding glib. But I can't think of another way to put it. Where do you go when you're performing a piece like that?
It depends. It takes a while to take off. But if it's a good piece, and we have such good chemistry, Jeff and I, so it's pretty easy to go to this place where I believe that we need to go more often, which is a place of instinct and maybe even a lack of control, lack of consciousness or ego, you know, because we're so stuck in our little boxes.
Yeah. How different is the experience of making a record from performing live?
Well, that's a great question, because when we made this last record, we wanted to have the same experience as a live audience. So we brought in a choir of 60 people just to have the bodies and the energy in there.
And the songs on the record, since they are songs with lyrics, they can have a very overt kind of message, an overt narrative. I got a sense from what you guys just did of a kind of implied narrative there. Is that something that you set out to do? Do you find that happening when you perform like this?
No. But I'm always happy to have people glean whatever they want from the performances. And that's kind of the nature of what I'm doing. For example, I'm really happy that this isn't for everyone. And I'm really happy that not everyone likes it, because I don't like everyone. And I'm pretty picky with who I like, so I think that if people don't like my music, it's a good indication of whether or not we should hang around. And I found that the music is almost like a call to fellow people that think and feel in the same way. So I've built a beautiful music family with this call.
Yeah.
So that's good.
Well, you know, I first heard traditional Inuit throat singing, and I have to hasten to add that what you do is very different.
Mm-hmm.
On an LP that probably came out maybe 30 years ago or so, and it seemed like, first of all, it was women's music, and it was women in pairs singing into each other's mouths, using their mouths as a resonating chamber, and the music was kind of playful. The songs would last a minute or two, and the women would dissolve into a fit of giggles, but they were also kind of showing something, you know, the way Australian Aboriginal music will, you know, that's the kangaroo leaping across the plains, and that's the alligator. You know, there are certain musical gestures that people know what they mean, and that it seems like that's part of the traditional throat singing in the North.
Yeah, there's a very long history and a deep tradition of throat singing at home, and it's absolutely beautiful. Maybe someday I can come with my cousin and show you some of the traditional stuff.
Oh, that would be great.
It's absolutely wonderful. And it's a friendly competition.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what you do uses a lot of the sounds of the throat singing. There's like this remarkable thing that happens when you go from the guttural kind of throat voice back up to your head voice and kind of moving back and forth between the two, which is a pretty good metaphor for what you as an artist do, moving between the traditional and the contemporary, it seems.
Well, what is traditional is contemporary, because Indigenous culture is contemporary and it is here right now. And a lot of Indigenous culture gets put in a museum, or we get objectified. Like, quite often people will come to my shows and wonder what the cute little Eskimo girl's going to do. You know, and I think what I'm doing is more, it's a contemporary take, and it's an individual take, and it's contemporary music. And quite often I get pigeonholed into how I'm supposed to behave within my culture. But I think that people are free to be whatever they want to be. Mm-hmm. And we can't put those boundaries on people based solely on their culture.
You grew up, obviously, with some of this traditional singing you mentioned, you know. But did you also get a chance to hear people like Meredith Monk, Diamanda Galas, you know, some of the contemporary extended vocal technicians of our time?
Good question. I didn't grow up with throat singing. The area where I'm from in the High Arctic is the Central Arctic, where I grew up, was pretty heavily affected by the residential school program, so I didn't hear throat singing growing up at all. And I grew up listening to my dad's records, and it wasn't until I was away in university that my mother was sending me cassettes of this throat singing, and I instantly knew it belonged in my bones and started singing it. And it wasn't until later that I discovered Diamond Galas and Meredith Monk, because people kept telling me, you have to check these guys out. And I was like, I'm not alone! So happy.
Yeah,
they're amazing.
Well, you know, Diamanda, her music often has a very strong sense of narrative, and so does Meredith, you know, even without using the words, which is kind of what I was getting from this performance you and Jeffrey did here today. But there is a strong narrative element to the songwriting, and, you know, it's pretty obvious on an album like Retribution. Women's rights, the plight of women, especially in the high Arctic, there's been a kind of a metaphorical rape of the land and literal rape of women. I mean, is that from outside the society, or has the intrusion of, you know, kind of Western society produced a breakdown within the culture?
Again, that's a massive question.
Yeah.
Massive
questions.
Yeah, we need a lot of time to go over, because, I mean, what has happened throughout my life, I'm not only talking about Inuit women, I'm talking about Indigenous women, and then I'm talking about women, and then I'm talking about humanity, and then I'm talking about the earth. So it's a massive undertaking to even try to penetrate the ideologies that are being applied to the sounds I'm making. I guess I was always an activist, simply because being alive as an Indigenous woman today is a form of activism. And I was always trying to discuss Indigenous rights, and was being faced by so many walls everywhere I turned, like because of all the stereotypes and people not understanding why things are the way they are. So I thought about what's the lowest common denominator between all of us, so that we can build empathy and understanding between each other, and its breath. It's breath, and then it's the human condition. So that's where this music touches people, because, you know, we hide so much behind personas, and then so much behind what Western society or humanity, what the rules that are placed upon us, what we're allowed to feel, how we're allowed to conduct ourselves. So all of this is at the baseline, base of what's happening. But on top of all of that, yeah, my daughters and I are 4 times more likely to be murdered in Canada than any other racial demographic. And we live this every day. And I'm sure, I want to believe in humanity, and it sounds naive, but I want to believe that people would care if they understood the semantics of what's behind the politics of where we are, how and where we are, where we are. And this applies to America, too. It applies to treaty systems all over the world. It applies to Indigenous people all over the world. And on a larger scale, it applies to globally who we choose to war with, who we choose to attack, who we choose to harm, and what we choose to close our eyes to every day.
Well, and in that context, the one cover song on the last album takes on a kind of a chilling note. You do Nirvana's Rape Me. And I want to give people a chance to actually hear this. This is from the latest record by Tanya Tagak. It's called Retribution.
Rape me.
Bit of Tanya Tagak's cover of the Nirvana song Rape Me. That is from her most recent album called Retribution. Is there an analogy to the plight of Indigenous women that you're talking about, yourself, your daughters being 4 times more likely to be murdered? Is there an analogy to be drawn between the way women are treated, especially in indigenous cultures, and the way the land is treated nowadays.
Absolutely. I would never trivialize the individual pain. They are different things.
Mm-hmm.
It's all mothers, you know? It's all mothers. And our earth, it's just shameful. It's repugnant, the way the land grabbing, the everything we're doing to her is careening us straight into destruction of humanity. And people are so idiotic to not be able to grasp that concept. So it's an easy album to make, and it's an easy bridge to cross when it comes to these things. And yeah, I mean, I suppose climate change deniers, I'm sure they think they're doing a good thing, but they're not. It's okay. It's only the end of us. Like, the earth will be fine and eventually swallowed by the sun anyway. But when it comes to women's rights, like in Canada, there's been over 2,000 missing and murdered Indigenous women since the 1980s. So I just want to people to understand that there's a myth that it all comes from within our own culture and our own selves. And it's true that a lot of trauma has trickled down intergenerationally through the residential school program. But we're also being hunted, and the majority, because people know that, you know, no one's going to care. If you fish me out of the river, they'll care more if it was any other race. So the predators prey. Predators prey, and we have to talk about this, and we have to make it well known, and people have to care.
Well, and apparently some people do. I mean, you received the Order of Canada, which is, that's one of the highest civilian honors in Canada. And I love what it's for. It's a Latin expression, desiderantes meliorum patrium. They desired a better country. That's pretty high praise. Whatever you get it for.
I suppose it hasn't happened yet. Maybe we haven't gone through the ceremony. Maybe I'll be more focused on it then. I think that right now I'm just, you know, when I read the news every day and when I see what happens to my friends and my family and people around me, that's a lot more important than any accolade that could come my way. And I'm doing this because I feel it and because we live it, not because of things like that, even though I'm so thankful, you know?
You're performing as part of the American Songbook series. On the one hand, it seems like an odd fit. On the other hand, what could be more truly American, and in this case North American, than raising tough subjects and tackling taboos and things like that? I mean, do you feel like an outsider in this series?
You know what? 15 years ago when I started this, my entire career has been people telling me I don't fit. And I don't fit anywhere. I was in the world music scene for a while, didn't fit there. I don't fit in the punk scene or the rock scene or the classical scene. And, you know, my dad's white. You know, I'm half Inuk. Like, I've never fit anywhere anyway, so I really don't give a shit.
And having mentioned all those different styles of music, you've done all those things, even the classical. I mean, you wrote a piece for Kronos Quartet, and you've been a part of the...
I love them.
Yeah. And you've been a part of a work by the classical Canadian composer Derek Chark, and so your kind of musical expression has taken many different forms. Mm-hmm. Which also makes you hard to pigeonhole.
Yeah, and that's why it was so difficult to plot on at times, because a lot of people wanted me to do a nice song. And I love my mom so much. I just remember her saying, "Can't you just make one nice song?" So I try sometimes for her. But I don't want to depart from what I believe in. On so many levels, I want to be open to learning and at the same time steadfast to what I know is true.
Well, the most recent output from Tanya Tagak is the album called Retribution, and Is there another one in the works, or do you take a little time between?
I have 6 songs, but they're in my head. They'll manifest when they want to.
Okay. Tanya, it's really been great having you and Jeffrey here with us in the studio today. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's been very, very nice.
This is Soundcheck. That's all for this Soundcheck podcast. Check out soundcheck.org for other performances, in-studio videos, gig alerts, weekly music roundups, and more. Our technical director is Irene Trudell, who also engineered this session. Light production work provided by the New Sound staff, Karen Havlick. I'm John Schaefer. Thanks for being with us.
The loss of ice cover will catapult our climate into an uncharted apocalyptic era of rapid heating. There will be no stopping.